FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Have I ever said that before? 20 years, 19 years of being on the radio with you, and then comes the challenge every day. You know, what do we talk about today? But there's never a loss, because so many people call, so many people send letters, so many people ask questions, events come up, things happen in the world. 9/11 is coming up again, as if you haven't heard enough about it. Here comes the 6th anniversary, and with it comes one particular question, a question about its effects, and a question about something that kind of blossomed as a result of 9/11. I'm going to sidestep for a moment. You've all ever heard something about the subprime mortgage crisis in the world. You know, you've heard something about that, right? And that people have to sell their houses. I was noticing on the internet, I was getting junk mail now about how you can get these houses cheap that people are selling, ready to exploit new people. That whenever there is a thing, subprime mortgage crisis, there's somebody ready to exploit it. How are we going to make money out of it? Well, 9/11 had its bunch of exploiters, as we know, and then it had its group of people who were doing very good things in the world. One of the things that we noticed and we paid more attention to is a thing called post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, because 9/11 was so dramatic, and a lot of money rushed into New York, government money, and people set up clinics all over the place providing services, but those clinics got the money to provide the services, and they provided services for people who were traumatized by 9/11. And it didn't take long before people were claiming they were traumatized by 9/11, even if they weren't, so that they could get some of these free services. In fact, the American Red Cross had a criteria that almost anybody could fit, as long as you say, well, I thought about 9/11, and that's what bothered me. So now you have this difficulty. Here we are, mental health experts. We're trying to say, well, what's real and what's not real? What is post-traumatic stress disorder? What is not post-traumatic stress disorder? And it's at the point where the term post-traumatic stress disorder, which means a stress reaction after a trauma, is so used in so many different ways that somebody needs to help clarify. And so that's what we're doing today. And I am not saying there is no trauma, but what is trauma? Before 1980, certainly we knew Gilgamesh in the 3rd millennium BC said, it could go on and on for years, and it has for centuries, when he was talking about the memories of somebody who survived a violent encounter. Memories after a violent encounter, traumatic memories. We've known about this for years, but in 1980, the American Psychiatric Association decided to make a classification called post-traumatic stress disorder. They made it a psychiatric disorder, and it's one of the few psychiatric conditions to which the manual ascribes a definite cause. It says, here's the cause of it. You see, if you have a lot of problems or you have emotional problems, we don't tell you exactly what the cause is. We say maybe what the cause is. You know, oh, you had trouble with your father when you were young. That's why you're shy. You had trouble with your mother. You didn't go to school. You know, maybe. Trauma is post-traumatic stress disorder points its finger directly to a thing that happened. And it said that thing caused you to be having a reaction now, and that reaction is hurting you. So it's one of the few disorders in life that have a definite cause. No one has any doubts that trauma can have devastating effects. But a debate about the diagnosis has been ignited, because a lot of people are using it for many different things. Let's talk about it. War. War is a motherload of traumatic experience and the chief source of the concept of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, comes from war. In the American Civil War, The resulting symptoms were sometimes called battle fatigue. See, now battle fatigue, Civil War. First World War, we called people shell shock when they came back. Second World War, we called it combat neurosis or traumatic neurosis. Soldiers in those wars who succumbed to post-traumatic stress were sometimes regarded as weak or inadequate. A soldier came back and he was shaken and he couldn't sleep and he had these symptoms and people looked at him as something is wrong with him. He's weak. If he's a real man, he could go through all of this and not suffer. So they hid their feelings about it. They couldn't talk about it. Physicians and mental health professionals came to see the symptoms as normal responses to abnormal circumstances. Unlike saying that it is a crazy reaction, we're saying, hey, that's a normal response to a crazy situation. Wouldn't anybody respond that way, given that situation? At the time that this manual was compiled, professionals began to emphasize more lasting effects of the trauma. In the aftermath of the Vietnam War, some critics have suggested that it served a political purpose, and it did. In effect, making the case that war is dangerous to mental health. You see, so in other words, people use PTSD as a weapon against being in war. Okay, I'm pro that. But using a thing and taking a psychiatric disorder and bending it for your purposes, I'm not so sure I want to do that or be a part of that, but they did it. And then PTSD was used for many other things related to war, political things. Because it is now reimbursed, it's insurable, it's recognized. Now, at the same time as this was taking place at the Vietnam War, the women's movement was drawing new attention to the effects of physical and sexual and physical abuse and verbal abuse in early childhood. So then women started saying, hey, post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual abuse, physical abuse in childhood. So what is this? How do you define it? Do you have post-traumatic stress disorder or don't you? Okay, here are some symptoms. The disorder is defined today, and it involves three symptoms. And if you just tuned in, and if you tuned in late, we talk. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yes. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, three kinds of stress disorder. Hyperarousal, number one, symptom. Not the kinds, but this is a symptom. People who have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, are irritable, easily startled, and constantly on guard. They sleep poorly, and they have difficulty concentrating. Well, that makes up half of my friends right there. You know, there they go. They must all have post-traumatic stress disorder. But no, this is a kind of level of you just can't find a safe place. And you jump. And you jump easily, you know. It's not like, it's like you're on steroids all the time, or it's like combination of things. Okay, then the second thing is, must be there in order to have this as your diagnosis, a re-experiencing or an intrusion of the original event. They recall the traumatic event involuntarily in the form of vivid memories, nightmares, and flashbacks. So a war veteran with PTSD would actually hear the bombs and see the airplanes and hear the guns and remember the smells of the foxhole and burning. I mean, all of that comes to you, and you actually feel as if you're there. They may even or even act as though it's happening again. You know, they'll run for cover, and they'll, you know. Or if you're somebody who was abused as a child, you know, and somebody yells at you in an argument, you may suddenly perceive yourself as being beaten when you're not being beaten. Any object, situation, or feeling that reminds them of the trauma can cause intense distress. So if you're in the back seat of a car, and you had an accident in the back seat of a car where one of the people I knew had, where she was trapped and her family was killed in the car, and she was trapped in the back seat for 2 hours until they could extricate her while she was there with a dead family. I mean, that's pretty traumatic. Whenever she got in a car, she had that feeling. See, whenever she heard the screech of a tire, she had that feeling. All the associations. So the first thing is the person's nervous, they're hyper-aroused, they're easily startled, they're always on guard. The second thing is they re-experience the trauma. It comes back at them over and over again. And the third is avoidance and emotional numbing. Now, this is very important. They avoid feelings, thoughts, people, places, situations that evoke memories of the trauma. They lose interest in their usual activities. They feel estranged from other people. And they feel estranged from their own feelings, too. You just go numb. Well, it makes sense if you think about it. What's a body to do? A child is being beaten. What's she supposed to do? Say, Mommy, don't beat me up. That doesn't help. Mommy just hits you more. I'll give you something to cry about, you know? Daddy, don't hurt me. No, that doesn't help. You go numb. You leave your body. Leaving your body is one of the common ways of dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and one of the symptoms of it. People go numb. Now, these sets of symptoms have a common theme, which is a fixation on the original event. You think about that. The event dominates and controls the lives of people. They have not assimilated the experience. Well, how do you assimilate a trauma? You do. How do you assimilate a feeling? If you're sad, I met a man the other day who was grieving. He was grieving for his wife who died suddenly. And he's grieving. And I watched him as he sat in my office and he cried for 5 seconds. And then he stopped crying. And then he cried for 5 seconds and then he stopped crying. And I realized he didn't have any way of processing his emotions. He had no way of letting his feelings go through, pass through him. Because that's what feelings are supposed to do. They're supposed to come and go. They're not supposed to come and hang in there forever. They pass. They kind of go through you, you know, especially negative feelings. So if you get angry, you get angry and you get over it. If you get sad and you cry and you get over it. You assimilate it. It becomes part of you. Almost genetically, the experience, the emotion becomes a little part of you, but it kind of passes. It goes on with you. People with post-traumatic stress disorder have not assimilated the experience. So two people could have the very same experience, and one person could experience it at post-traumatic stress, and the other person may not. Important. It's not everybody gets it. The other thing is that they're both emotionally numb and constantly on guard at the same time. Imagine being emotionally numb and constantly on guard at the same time, right? It's like staying up all night, you know, and not having enough sleep and feeling really nervous. They feel desperately conflicting needs for both rest and vigilance. I would rest if only I could relax. And that's a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, you would say to me, well, then if you were abused as a child and you have a lot of those symptoms, therefore you must have post-traumatic stress disorder. But you see, the intrusion of the thought is really essential here. Do you, moment after moment, when you're going through this, do you relive the trauma? Do you see yourself being beaten? No. So you may have an effect. But for it to be post-traumatic stress disorder, we want to see it related to the trauma itself. That's one theory. Another theory is it could be anything. Now, if you're an agency who gets money for diagnosing post-traumatic stress disorder and you treat it, like the American Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Clinic, you know, there must be one, they're going to see everything as post-traumatic stress because that's what they get paid for. I mean, not that they don't treat it well, but that's the eyes they look with. So now let's take a look a little further. What is a trauma? What is a trauma itself? Let's define a trauma. A trauma used to be defined as an event beyond the range of ordinary human experience, one that would be distressing for almost anyone. That's a trauma. Katrina, right? 9/11. These are trauma. The event itself is a trauma. Now they redefined it as a traumatic experience is defined as one that involves a threat of death, serious injury, or the damage to physical integrity, and inspires intense fear, helplessness, or horror. Now you think about that. How many times have you felt that in your life? Do you ever feel helpless because of an event? Did you ever feel horror because of an event? Sure. Death, you know, fear of death, fear of serious injury, damage to your physical integrity. If you get worried about it, sure you did. Sure you did. And that is called trauma. That doesn't mean you have the syndrome, but that's what a trauma is. What arouses intense fear, helplessness, and horror in one person may have little effect on another. And I think of a case recently that I saw, a debate, where there was some man were talking about having had what was called sexual abuse as a child. And they had a number of men, I think there were four men, who were talking about having had women older than they were who would play with them as children. And they just had this in common, and they were talking about how this must be traumatic. But every one of them, three out of four of them, said, no, it wasn't traumatic, it was very pleasurable. You know, this is 12, 13 years old with older women who were molesting them and doing things. But they remembered it very well. We can't call it post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, we could say, yes, it's sexual abuse. Yes, the people should not do those things. Yes, but for the child, it not necessarily post-traumatic stress disorder. But in order to validate our findings, what people do is they try to say the child has trauma. The child doesn't always have trauma as a result of a traumatic stress disorder, as a result of a trauma. Now, interesting thing, when you talk about Duke University, they had a common trauma, and let me see which one it was. Might have been 9/11, the vast majority of trauma experience. And it was about 13% of people in a trauma situation had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Had symptoms of it, one or another symptom, alertness, you know, the other two I described, and only one out of 200 people had the actual post-traumatic stress disorder itself. So it's not as common as you think, but it's there. Just as trauma only occasionally causes symptoms, the symptoms associated with the diagnosis are not always a result of trauma, because you could have the trauma on one hand, and then you could have something else going on with your mind at another, so you could be emotionally disturbed and have trauma, and so your emotional disturbance may have nothing to do with the trauma. This is Armand de Mille. I hope I'm not confusing you too much. Because, you know, it's like we need to sort it out, because if you see it, if you're around it, if you feel it, maybe you got to do something about unearthing it, which you could do. Gender has a lot to do with it. Gender, the effects of gender, male, female. It's become clear that people who develop post-traumatic stress disorder differ from those who don't in a number of ways. Women seem to be three times as susceptible as men. What does that mean? Means that women, well, it's actually a good reason for it. They may be more biologically vulnerable for genetic or hormonal reasons, right? Because more receptivity, more sensitivity, so on and so forth. They also tend to undergo different kinds of trauma, because men suffer from non-sexual physical violence, women more rape and childhood sexual abuse. So the women's are much more of a violation. With a man, it's possible with a man to kind of, in your way, get angry and fight it off and do something with it. For the woman who is completely powerless as a child, it becomes much harder to rationalize it away. The other thing about men, when they experience trauma, they immediately went numb, and they find a way of going dead much faster. That's why they become our soldiers. That's why we put them in war, because we want dead soldiers. We want zombies. We want people who are psychopathic zombies in our war, so they could go out and they could kill everybody and not think twice about it, and not suffer from it, and not even have to sleep, because we don't want them to sleep either, because we want them to keep fighting and killing. We as a very small we, not all of us. So the women have much more of a tendency to react. The risk is even higher for victims who felt guilty because they believe they created this. And there you are. Because part of it is, if you're a little girl, you think you're to blame. And oh my gosh almighty. In fact, they even tell you you're to blame. Look what you did to me. Well, so, and when it comes to having to do anything sexual, oh my gosh, the girl is always held to blame. You know, you seduced, you acted this way, you did this, you did that. So, now there's two other things which have to do with intelligence level. One is high intelligence levels tends to blunt the effects of traumatic stress. So if you have a trauma, the more intelligent you are, the more you can kind of spin it in your brain so it doesn't have as much an effect. But the lower the IQ level, the more an effect it has on you. Does it mean just because you have post-traumatic stress, you have a low IQ? No. But the higher the IQ, the less potential there is for it. Depression, anxiety, alcohol, drug abuse, childhood behavior disorders, adolescent delinquency, antisocial personality, if you have any of those and then you get a trauma, right? If you're depressed and you have a trauma, anxiety and you have a trauma, alcohol or drug abuse and you have a trauma, childhood behavior disorders and you have a trauma, all of those will exacerbate your trauma, so you get what they call dual diagnosis. You have the trauma and the effect of the trauma, and then you have the vulnerability of your depression or whatever disorder you had underneath it. And they found that the men who showed the most hostility were the ones who are most likely to be easily traumatized. So hostile men who are angry, were the ones who seem to suffer the most. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take your calls after the break today because I want to talk to you about your traumas and what you may want to, possibility for you. It's easy to say it's the cause of, but most likely, you know, for most people, it's both. Genetic. Let's talk about genetic history. You know, Roberta talks about the D4DR chromosome. D4DR chromosome, you know, some people got it long ones and some people got short ones. And if I remember right, the ones with the long ones are better off than the ones with the short ones. If you have a chromosome that has a D4DR. If you have a D4DR with a longer chromosome, then you're less likely to have traumatic experiences than if you have the shorter one, because the ones with the longer ones seem to recover better. So now this is genetic, right? And this is just so you get twins, and you have two twins, and they're both Vietnam veterans. One will have the reaction, the other won't. And they're saying there's some chromosomal connection. Even some evidence that what happens to a person after the traumatic event influences the chance of developing post-traumatic stress disorder as much or if not more than the actual thing itself. So think about a woman with rape. A woman gets raped, traumatic effect, she goes somewhere where they blame her. That could have far more of an effect than the thing itself, the horror, the shame that she has to go through. What happens following the event? A trauma, a soldier in war, and he's traumatized, the worst thing I've heard reported by people is when people in your foxhole get blowed up. You know, where people in your truck get blowed up and it's pieces everywhere and you're dealing with this horror, right? What happens when you leave and you tell somebody? Well, if you're a soldier, they tell you, it happens, forget it. Drop it. You have no place to go. So the aftercare for trauma is very, very important. And I'm so glad that the police, through the women's movement and through a lot of activism, the police have become very sensitive now to women who are victims of crimes, and they are treating them more sensitively because they get the sense that it's really important. Now, I'm going to bring it to a close because we're going to have to take a break in a little bit. Because memory is so funny, sometimes you remember things differently. Sometimes you go back in time, and you go back in time and you remember it differently. Some people who have emotional breakdowns in their adult lives then go back in their mind and recreate a trauma that wasn't necessarily there. And so, because your memory can create one for you, and you could believe it's there way after the effect, but it really wasn't there. See, so the mind can do that, so that makes it even more difficult for us to figure out. You know, one step further, my friends, is a thing called post-traumatic futility disorder that I want to talk about. And this is when somebody goes through a post-traumatic stress and they feel futile. Futile is like you give up. You just don't have any, you just can't do anything. You know that sense of futility. You've had it. You know, it's like, I can't do anymore. I'm done. Futility is very tough. And they now call it post-traumatic futility disorder, meaning that the sense of futility that follows a trauma. So, for now, it's important to remember that not all traumas are alike. That any trauma can affect different people differently. Post-traumatic stress disorder should not necessarily be the default diagnosis when symptoms appear. Just because you see the symptoms, don't jump for it, especially if you sell the cure. Present controversies are there all over the place about it because they're it's a political football because it's an acknowledged disorder. And that traumatic effects are a threat to mental health, and that the effects can be lasting, and that sufferers often need and deserve help. And our soldiers who come back from Iraq, who come back here having seen so much that they're not allowed to talk about, imagine the effect. They come back with blown off limbs because they've got the body armor, right? They see so much horror that they've done, has been done to them, and they're not allowed to talk about it. Are we going to say, well, we pass on them? No. Weak enough to have been in the Army in the first place, whatever made you join the Army because you weren't drafted, right? And then go in the Army and then get Iraq assignment and then be in Iraq. And then come back, you're a lost kid all along, right from the beginning. You're lost. You're lost to even have joined the Army, and you're lost to have been in the Army, and you're lost to have been in Iraq, and you've suffered through horrors, and you have no support, and you don't know what to do, and you come back, and then nobody will talk to you about it, and they'll tell you, keep quiet, don't talk about it, because we don't want anybody to know how horrible it is to be in war, because we have to get more soldiers to go there. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. But there's wishful thinking because we've discovered this and we have found ways of treating it and ways of helping people with it. We must identify it. We have to look at it and give it some respect. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you, and I want to thank Sandra Guardiola, hey, and other people. So give us a call when we get back. We'll be take a short break when we get back at 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break, come back, a little music, and then continue.
You can tell me one thing, babe. You can tell me one thing, but I know it ain't true. Tell me one thing, baby. You can tell me one thing, but you know what you're saying ain't true. But it's gonna get you, baby. And a damn thing you can do. Slip and fall. retribution, babe. Retribution got a mind of its own. Retribution got the mind of its own.
With Habib Koite, K-O-I-T-E, from Blues Around the World. Retribution, baby. Has its way of coming back on you. Retribution is kind of what we're talking about, you know, how it comes around to get you a little later. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, or what's called post-traumatic stress disorder, just hoping that you get to understand it a little bit. I'll read you the symptoms once again. There are three known symptoms. They're known as, you know, the one, two, threes of post-traumatic stress. Number one, hyperarousal. Individuals with PTSD are irritable, easily startled, and constantly on guard. Now, that's a thing, you know, shell shot, we used to call it. You know, somebody comes back, they're so nervous.
Test of New York City's emergency alert system. This is only a test. In the event of a real emergency, this system would provide you with important information. This test of New York City's emergency alert system is now complete.
Third one is avoidance and emotional numbing. Right? Avoidance and emotional numbing. They avoid feelings, they avoid thoughts, they avoid people, places, and situations that evoke memories of the trauma. So I'll repeat these three again. Hyperarousal, just in case you got a test for a moment. Hyperarousal, which individuals with this are irritable, right? Re-experience of the trauma is the second one, and avoidance and emotional numbing. Now, emotional numbing, I tell you, most of the guys I know are numb. You know, and I wonder if that's not the source. So we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. I do want to hear from you. Just one more thing, my friends. The Endocrine Society, of all people, got in on this. And I mean get in. They contribute, you know, in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Pregnant women present during the September 11th World Trade Center collapse. Right? They were pregnant women who were present. There were 39 of them they found. They studied these 39 people, and they found that their babies had, through transgenerational transmission, had lower levels of cortisol than the average baby. Oh, my gosh. That means that you could pass it down through the generation, through your neck. If his baby's in your belly, okay, there's one, right? There's one place. So if the baby, if you have a baby and you're pregnant, you could pass on your attention to the baby hormonally. The child may be less able to deal with life. That's one. Now, you could say, well, with a mother that nervous, of course you would be. But they also see it chemically. They see these chemical adaptations. Now, that's one argument, which is kind of intriguing. Now, what if the mother's not pregnant, but what if it's just in her blood somewhere and she gets pregnant later? What if she's not pregnant at the time? Is it in her bones and then it kind of goes on to your bones or your genes? And then, therefore, we can take an argument, if your grandfather was traumatized, do you have any effect of that experience? It's a very funny thing. I mean, these are questions that we throw up in the air, and of course everybody's got theories about it, and if they're selling something that week that in relates to this, they'll kind of pull it up and say, here's the proof of it, you know? I just give it to you because I think you should know all that there is to know about the human mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand?
Yes.
I haven't spoken to you in quite a time. Where to start?
Who is this?
This is Austin.
Hello, Austin. I remember.
Yeah.
Austin, it's been a year and a half.
Almost a year.
Almost a year.
Yeah,
okay.
We had kind of a feisty conversation.
Sure, I remember.
Left me a little numb.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the low grade constant pain that one might feel when one is in the milieu of pain versus being in a war. One can go to a war and be thought of as heroic and feel heroic, and be thought of differently, I think, especially as a man, whereas if you're in a situation where you might not have a singular traumatic event, but you grew up in a situation that sort of violated you in little tiny but big ways constantly, that somehow isn't given as much attention. I mean, junior high school was like an emotional vivisection for me. And sometimes when I go into the subway, I'm very much more afraid of someone challenging my manhood than a terrorist bomb going off.
Sure.
Because that would be more devastating to my personhood. You know, someone challenging me, like pushing into me, and what do I say back or not, and assessing if this is someone that I can take on physically or emotionally, or what do I do in that split second versus the threat to my life of a bomb going off.
You know, Austin, you have to give a consideration to the world as we evolved, our species evolved as a result of being warlike creatures, just like the animals. And the way we were warlike creatures is we were never allowed to pay attention to our sensitivities. The only way we could survive is by not being sensitive. So insensitivity to hurts is one of the survival tools that we have. The body actually secretes different things that help you not become sensitive when you're in danger, so that you could go through the danger. So now, with this being part of our survival, what you and I and other men have said, no, we don't want to be numb. We don't want to just go through life. We want to feel things. And what you're saying, Austin, is, and what happens if you invite the feeling and you allow the feeling of fear to be there?
Right.
Almost everybody who goes into a subway who has a consideration of a fear, if they allow themselves to feel it, will feel it.
I don't think I've gone completely numb. That's why I think of myself as kind
right.
of a hybrid. You know, I'm
that's
not.
Right.
I've always had access to those, for better and for worse, those feelings. So because I have perhaps a nuanced connection to, and that's why you say when men have this reaction, I have a reaction that somehow might be considered not the typical manly reaction. So therefore, I fall into a place where people have trouble understanding where I might be coming from in my specific case.
I understand, you know, but I've got to also say to you, I fall into the same category where people don't understand my sensitivities. How could I be so sensitive to other people? What's the matter with me? You know what I mean?
You're a big, gruff, macho guy. Why are you in this business?
That's right. What am I doing? Taking care of people. I could be out there killing people or doing something else very masculine. You know, but you know, we're on the same team. We're on the team of trying to sensitize the world, Austin, you know? And we're going to get pushed around a little bit if we allow ourselves to feel things, because things are going to hurt.
Let me say one more thing.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I had what then be called dyslexia, I guess today it'd be called other things. I had a tutor who helped me greatly. He helped me to learn to read, but at the same time, he molested me. So you know, there's that dichotomy. And my relationship with school has always been complicated because of that. You know, where does learning interface with pain, and how do you separate one from the other? You know, how much is a teacher able to teach versus how much does a teacher have to be a disciplinarian in an urban environment? You know,
it is a real delicate balance, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
I want to thank you for calling in, Austin.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Take care.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. Hey, if there's anybody out there today, we had a little engineering quirk that happened here on the air. And so what happened was we lost our recording of today's program. So anybody out there who's got a recording of today's program, get in touch with me, would you, and send it to me. I'd appreciate it. Thank you. We will get it. And we'll have it online. I know we have another way of getting it online, but I'd like to have a copy from any of you who made a copy. And my second announcement is we are looking for these volunteers, social workers, mental health workers, to work on an administrative project with us. We still have a couple of openings for this, 212-757-4488. If you're a student of psychology or social work and thinking about entering the field, we're looking for some volunteers. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is
Hi there.
Cecile. And when I heard you addressing this subject, post-traumatic syndrome, disorder, whatever, and I thought of Joyce Leary's book, Post-Slavery Traumatic Syndrome, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And is it possible for parents or a cultural group to pass on the survival tool to their children in terms of being, according to Leary, if I remember it well, through slavery, our black African people had develop some, let me use my own terminology, trait, and then maybe through avoidance or emotional numbness, whatever, it passed on some survival tool to the group in order not to cope with the hostile environment. Can, you know, could you just tell me what is the difference between Joy Leary?
I won't talk about Joy Leary, but let's talk about what you know. You know something. I mean, you're pretty wise because you've seen this, haven't you?
Thing is, I've been listening to you for years, and I'm somehow fascinated by, you know, whatever is, you know, human relation. And I've been thinking about this, and when I read Joy Leary and I heard you, that's the first thing that came to me, Joy Leary, in terms of passing on a survival tool. I use the trait where you use avoid emotional numbness, and I see when we try to put things in the back of our mind, and we put through denial or things like that, we don't deal with the problem. Then we parents could use that as a tool to teach their children to survive. You just mentioned about.
And they do. And they do, and it is. And what happens is, unfortunately, we have so many survival tools that come back from being apes, you know, from being in the jungles. We have so many survival tools as it is that we have to overcome a lot of survival tools. Who wants to be numb? Yes, they do. You can pass them on, and when necessary, it's great. I mean, you know, if we had a real war, or if we were in the middle of a crisis, every one of us would pull up our survival instinct, and we would find a way to get through. But we don't need that. And so most of us can allow that to kind of pass as we develop ourselves and try to move on to a different level of consciousness. But I think you're right. I think that it is inherited. I think you can pass it on through attitudes, even through genetics. And I think at the same time, we're trying to evolve past some of these automatic tools. Does that make sense to you?
To me, being Haitian, and I understand it as a safety net, a safety tool to be able to continue living.
Well, I'm certainly, if there were any place in the world where it was necessary for generations, Haiti is a place where it was necessary. Because as you've gone through the regimes, I mean, there's Every time I've ever spent in Haiti, I was amazed at the survival mechanism, but it was accompanied by this dullness, by this kind of being present but not being there. You know, and that is the survival tool. What are you going to do? You don't have tools, you don't have weapons, you don't have money, you don't have power. How are you going to get through? And so that is what was passed on. And now that is what we have to grow out of.
Okay, thank you, Omar.
Thank you, thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
How are you, Armand?
Good.
This is Tony. I love your show.
Hi, Tony.
I often use a lot of your examples, you know, just to live. I mean, it's just amazing. I just want to thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
But what I wanted to share was also that my story, too, you know, I went through a divorce, and the marriage was pretty bad, and the divorce took a couple of years, and it was very, very abusive and acrimonious and, you know, pretty bad, just like a lot of typical stories. And after it was over, I was so glad to be done with it, and I thought I was okay. I was, oh, it's done. But it wasn't, man. It took me like another year, year and a half, because I had that, you know, I never understood that until I lived it, that post-traumatic stress disorder. You know,
yeah.
I felt like, you know, when somebody keeps punching you and you keep ducking, and even when they stop punching, you're still ducking. You know, you
That's
can't
right.
help it, you flinch. I felt that emotionally for the next year or so. It was really weird, you know, and I just, you know, I'm glad to be through it, past it, and I've dealt with it, but I thought that that was interesting that you could have that from a divorce. You know?
But what happened? Wait, who's your latest romance?
Excuse me?
What's your latest romance?
Oh, I'm in a wonderful relationship right now.
Tell me about it.
Oh, my God. You don't want to get me started on that.
I do want to get you started on that.
Oh, well,
because you sound like, to me, you know why, Tony? Because you're a conscious man, and we hear enough about people who are unconscious. So let's talk to Tony for a minute. Tony, who do you love?
I love my family, but if we want to talk about romantic love, I'm in love with a wonderful woman right now, and it's really, really the best relationship. But you know what? I'm going to share this with you. You're going to love this. When I say I've never loved anyone the way I love her, you know, what most people would hear is that I've never been in love like that. How I really mean it is I've never treated anyone with so much love and respect as I treat this woman now.
And if you could speak to her right now and she could hear you on the airwaves, if she could access the archives of WBAI by going into our website and looking at an archive of today's program, or if she could just, wherever she is, sense the love that you're feeling for her, what would you say to her directly now, besides the words, I love you? Say some words to her directly now. Imagine they're going up to the ethers, Tony, and they're filtering down somewhere around her.
Oh, I'm just so thankful that Evangeline, her name is Evangeline, came into my life.
Say it to her directly. I'm so glad you.
Oh, I'm so glad you've come into my life. It was at a perfect moment for me. I love you, I adore you, I love everything about you, and I'm so thankful that I have the opportunity to love you, and thank you for loving me. It's the most, it's the healthiest relationship I've ever had, and we're together 4 years, and I want to marry her.
Good going. Good going. We have to get Evangeline on the air someday here, so, you know, we both... Both all of us talk. Tony, nice going. Thank you so much.
Thank
and yes, you.
You
know, maybe the process you went through to go through the end of the divorce and that time was like a purge.
Absolutely.
You know, that prepared you for Evangeline.
No, I told her the other day that everything I've gone through to get to this point was, you know, the journey, and she was the culmination of that journey, you know?
It was preparation for being there. You know,
yes.
Here in your life.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling in, Tony.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. Now we're talking about post-traumatic joy. You know, here he is. Here's the other way around it. When you go through rough stuff, you know, sometimes. Now, I'm not talking about the rough stuff of exercise where you get filled with endorphins and all that stuff. But sometimes when you go through the rough stuff and you come out the other side, you really have an angelic presence. Because you know what it's like to handle the tough stuff. I've watched people who are survivors. I watch the people of Haiti. I watch the people of, you know, of Europe. And I watch what they go through, and then I watch them how they come out of it. And the ones that come out have a much bigger heart, a much bigger soul, and they seem to have a much bigger presence and contribute on this planet, like Tony and Evangeline. Nice. One more call, 212-209-2900. One more call. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air.
Armand, this is Tony Maiulo. How are you?
Tony Maiulo, how are you, Tony? Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Armand. Two Tonys.
Two Tonys.
Two Tonys in a row. What's the chance?
Not much. We got about 2 minutes. But, Tony, nice to hear from you.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd break me. I want you to break me.
Uh-huh.
Your brother, I want you to break me.
What does that mean?
I'm your little brother. Break me.
Yeah, in other words, you're saying, you know, we only have a few minutes here. Do your thing to me, Armand. Make me feel something that I don't feel right now, because I know you have the power to do it.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
Okay, I understand.
But I got great respect and love for you, as you know.
I love you, Armand.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Well, break me. Is that what it's come to? They call up. Go ahead. Pull it out of me. Go ahead, Armand. Do your thing. We know what you're going to do. Go ahead. I'm ready for you. That's what happens when people walk in my office. That's what happens when people come in for their initial consultation with me. Go ahead. Do it to me. I know you're going to do it to me. They're ready. Exactly right. As Sandy says, it's like baring your scalp. Here's my brain. Look at it. Hey, we're going to be going. We're going to be going. We're going to be taking our little leaving, and I'll be back with you tomorrow, Thursday, at 1 p.m. My friends, my special thanks to all the people around who have helped me with today's program and the ones who weren't here who helped me with today's program as well. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. If you want to get a copy of today's program, wait till I get it first, and then go to thepositivemind.com. And also, you can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Bye-bye for now, my friends. Oh, and if you haven't, one more thing. If you haven't gotten responses from me, but you've sent me mail from Yahoo, watch out. Yahoo's been having such problems with us that send it to me from another server. All right? And I will respond. Bye-bye for now.
Tell me, pass me your hat.
Pass me your hat.
All right. So many places to go with that. I'm sure you can relate to that. Tony, was it Tony from the previous program? Yeah. A thin line between love and hate. Here on WBAI at 99.5 FM, it's 1:58 in New York City. Coming up next, I believe it is Real World. Mike Sargent gave me a call just a little while ago, and he said ran into a little bit of traffic, and he's on his way here. So we're waiting for Mike Sargent. That'll be coming up in a moment. We have some announcements to move through, and then Real World. Talk back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 p.m. You're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI.
This is Tony Ryan, host of Soul Central Station. Stop by and hear some of your favorite soul R&B classics featuring funk, Motown, and club classics. I'm here every Sunday morning between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. So make sure you stop by and take a listen and try to win a pair of tickets during the ticket giveaways. That's Soul Central Station every Sunday morning between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on your Peace and Justice radio station, WBAI 99.5 FM.